These people are confused. This needs to love God stronger. You are loving God more than loving me. God straight, Jesus.
Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
And you are listening to Live from the Path. We're coming to you from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. It's comforting that I know that you're there and you're listening to me. You don't think so? What happened to the double-minded man? Oh, sorry, I'm Ben Foose, the double-minded man. The repenting double-minded man. Hey, it's good to have you here. We got a packed studio, and hey, we're talking games tonight.
Yeah.
We're talking games tonight. Mike, what's your favorite game growing up? And let's do like board game, card game type of thing, not like softball.
It's Monopoly,
straight up Monopoly.
Yeah.
Now, do you put money in the free parking?
No, I find that a cheap way to live. Yeah, just like people who take a late lunch, that lunch at like 1 o'clock, come back at 2. That's cheap, man. Just live life. You don't have to try to cheapen the day by taking a late lunch. That is lame.
Daniel Johnson, free parking on Monopoly or no?
I did free parking.
You put money in the free parking?
You get money in the free parking. Yeah. It's not supposed to be played.
Yeah. Yeah.
Follow the rules.
Yeah, just like opening presents on 2 days before Christmas. You know what I'm saying? Cheap living.
Oh, jeez.
Hudson, you do Monopoly?
When I can get people to play, yeah.
You can't, what, people don't agree
to play?
But
my family won't play. They just won't let, I try to play, they're like, no.
It's cutthroat.
They don't like that.
Did I tell you, I invented a board game when I was, I was actually just thought of this a couple years ago. It's called One Guy Owns Everything. And like there's properties and stuff, and you can build apartments and jazz.
Really?
And the goal is for one guy to own everything.
That is amazing.
I know. I feel like there's good money in it, and I'm going to print it up.
there's a narcissistic dude waiting to pick that up. I will dominate this game.
Yeah. If anybody will win, it will be me.
And like you roll a dice and you go around like in a circle?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah,
I like it.
Yeah.
That's original is what that is.
Some of the places you can land are more expensive than others.
Yeah.
But overall, I think it will captivate the gaming audience.
You know what would be really cool is if there's like a jail.
Yeah.
People are like sometimes had to go to jail.
Yeah, just if they happen to land on a space or they drew some kind of card structure, they put them in it.
Man, you're thinking now.
I know.
Man, I like it.
Here's the thing is I heard somebody try to invent this earlier in the century, but it took two guys to come up with it, Parker Brothers. Yeah. Me, I just done it on my own. One man.
Clearly much smarter.
You get all the profits that way.
Is it only two dudes? There could be three Parker Brothers. Yeah, it was Milton Bradley and Joe, and then Joe, he was cooking the books.
That's his last name, Milton Bradley Parker?
Yeah, Milton Parker and Bradley Parker.
Oh, really?
No, none of these things are true.
Yeah. Shoot, man.
I was being strung right along. Yeah.
It would have been a revelation.
I thought, well, that's a folksy story. I could tell that.
Yeah.
All right. Chris Roloff, favorite game growing up?
Oh, gosh, favorite game growing up. Sorry.
Have you purchased a Sorry game recently?
I did.
They're cheap.
They are cheap. I actually found it at a thrift store for $2, the original 1949 version of Sorry with the cars and everything.
Oh, really?
Wow. Original Pawns and all that, yeah.
I bet that smelled like a retirement home.
It did.
Okay.
So that's the only version of Sorry we own, so it's kind of... No, that's not true. We have a really fascinating game called Sorry Sliders. It's absolutely wonderful. It's. Have you seen that before, Dan?
No, but it just...
It sounds great. It's... The Sorry, classic Sorry-looking pawns that you slide, it's like, what's that? It's the Winter Olympics now, curling?
Yeah.
So you slide them into the center, and you actually, there's like a big target in the middle, and that's how you get the number that
you move. It's like curling the home game?
Yeah. It's curling the home game. It's stinking awesome.
It's Sorry Shuffleboard. That's exactly what it is. Yeah.
It's stinking awesome. Got it at a thrift store for $2. That's a ton of fun.
Okay, that sounds pretty cool.
And you can set the board up in a lot of different ways. You can do the four angles where you just smack it into each other, or you can do like a real long one where you got to shove it all the way down there and then hit the guys.
I can think of like three rambunctious punks that I'd never play Sorry Sliders with.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there's the guy who's like, ha ha ha, wham.
Yeah.
He goes shooting around.
They don't want to score no points. They just want to wreck stuff.
Yeah.
And here's the cool kicker, though. If you do that, though, if you're that jerk guy, you go flying off the end of the board and you go back to start. That's how you get sorry. You get knocked yourself out.
That's right.
That guy, that type of guy I'm talking about, digs his heels in. He's like, good, I wanted to go back.
Yeah, I didn't
want to
win this game anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't. Yeah.
I just put a little butter on the bottom. I let that sucker sail.
I'm sorry you like this game so much because I don't even like it.
We recently purchased the Trouble.
Yeah.
And it's cheap too. Like, I mean, we bought it for the kids for Christmas, and the pieces are like a really thin plastic.
Mm.
And I was disappointed because it's just not the same. It's not the same deal.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'll have to keep an eye on a thrift store version, I guess.
Yeah, you'll see that every once in a while. Trouble's great because that's the originator of that popping thing. That in the middle there to do the dice.
That's classic fun. You can do that even without, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They should just sell those. You just have it sitting on the table.
Yeah. Who's going to make dinner? Six.
Six.
Not you. Why do I even roll?
Daniel Johnson, favorite childhood game?
That's tough. There's lots of them.
You've had a long time to narrow it down, Johnson.
Yeah, man, it's been a while. Scrabble was a big one. There's a game called Payday. I don't know if anyone else has played that.
Yeah.
I played that a lot as a kid. And then there was like Rummy was a big game when I was a kid in my family. No one else play that card game, Rummy?
No, of it. I have not played regular Rummy.
I haven't played Rummy since NOM, but I mean, I remember playing it a lot.
For some reason, Ace of Spades throws me back and I can't behave.
wait, is that different? Is Gin Rummy like a variation or is that the full?
It's a variation, but like I don't even remember how it's played. It's been so long. But nowadays, apples to apples is my favorite game.
Yeah, hold on. Is that how they do it? They put a piece of alcohol in front of the game and it makes it more fun? Gin Rummy?
Wild Turkey Rummy?
Yeah. Yeah, like I play Whiskey
Light.
Monopoly.
Yeah.
Bartle. This is Better Times.
Whiskey Trouble.
You're listening to Live from the Path. Not sure why. It's nothing but alcohol and board games tonight, boys.
Yeah.
Jesus is running in the backseat, I guess.
Wait, so Dave, did you answer?
I did not. When I was really young, I liked Candyland and Chutes and Ladders, and then it evolved into Life. That was kind of a fun game.
Life.
And then the Monopoly thing. But Careers was like, I don't know if you ever, there was an obscure game.
Yes.
I love that game.
Careers is genius.
Yeah.
Careers is genius. One of the fascinating, I took your thing, Dan. I love that game. I have a copy of that right now. It's not mine, but I have it on borrow. Do you still have a copy?
I think I do.
Ooh.
In my basement.
I might have a crisp, clean $1 bill for you. I give that right to you.
I'll throw in the Jurassic Park game that came.
Nice.
It's on top of it.
That
sounds fascinating.
That Chutes and Ladders is a frustrating game.
Oh, yeah.
That is a frustrating game because, like,
you're about to win, then you go.
Yeah, I mean,
down.
Here's the deal. It's like that sometimes has the same playing time as Monopoly without any skill level to it at all.
Yeah. No, that's true. Double purple. You think that'd get me halfway through the board? Nope.
Yeah.
You're only. Here's the thing. Here's why I had a hard time with it is because, like, I was playing it with my 6-year-old, my 3-year-old, and, like, I so desperately want the 3-year-old to win, right? She's just earnest, and she's just really excited to be playing a game at all, and, like, she just kept hitting the chutes, man. Like, it doesn't matter what she did.
And there's nothing you can do to
it's just the luck of the cards,
decision, you know?
And she keeps looking at me like, Dad, why is this happening to me, you know? And the 6-year-old is over the top of it. You know, I'm like, you stink of chutes and that. I'm like, hey, come on, man. She's like 3, you know? I'm on her team. But I don't want to be against my other kid. That seems wrong, too, you know?
Yeah,
so then you're just a conflicted father, and your heart pours out playing chutes and ladders.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, why don't we go high-five each other somewhere, you know? I feel like that we'd be game. Anyway.
All right, you are listening to Life and Path. We're talking games tonight because with us we have Chris Roloff, inventor of the Go Diving game.
Yeah.
And so we had Chris on. So you've met Chris before. Chris has the honor of being the guy with the catchiest tune that we've had on here, the catchiest one-liner. Because I will catch myself probably once a week going, who's on the Lord's side in? it just hangs around.
It does. In fact, that's the only part of the tune I know.
Yeah.
I make up the rest. Like, I go, who is on the Lord's side in? Who can to win the day? Like, I don't even know what the words are.
Who can win the day? That's much better. I like that.
So anyway, but he's crafting games, and we got to play a couple of these before the show even started, so that we can kind of break him in a little bit. But I'll let you kind of introduce it. Tell us a little about, first of all, like, what got you into designing games, either board games. We played a card game. Like, when did this come about? What got you into that?
Well, that's an interesting question, because it's the question you should ask, I guess. Really, designing games came about by accident. We talked about what are our favorite games growing up. So I played all the standard board games when I was a kid. Didn't play Careers when I was a kid. First time I played Careers was in like the last 6 months, which is a testament to how lame I am, I guess.
You have to buy it like at the educational stores now.
Oh, it's really hard to find. Careers is hard to find. But so I didn't play a lot of fancy schmancy games. And I did play Magic the Gathering, Pokemon, the collectible card game, if you've ever played that. Ooh. I played those kind of games. But anyway, so how I got kind of into designing games was my daughter's 5. And we're a homeschooling family, and my mom was an educator, and she had a big stack of manipulatives, which are these boxes that are filled with essentially game components. I mean, you got ships and people and cars and stuff, and then these little mats, and it's all math-based stuff. You know, you count here, and now, how many trucks are in the pond, or what, you know, you just count, and it's really boring, but it was basically a big pile of game components.
What kind of game are you selling this? How many trucks are in the pond?
It's a very sad thing, you know.
Roll dice for disaster.
We call it a Tennessee Friday night.
and that's what. So we got these, and one of the things in there were these really cool fish tokens, and they were double-sided. One side would be like white, yellow, and the other side would be red. And they were really cool, and it had dice in it and all that kind of stuff. And so I just got to fiddling around with it, and I wanted to come up with a story that would go with these components, and we'd try to solve the problem. Because all games basically present a problem, and then there's a solution. Typically. I guess Monopoly, there's no problem. There's a
goal. Yeah, the problem is that you stink at it, and I'm awesome.
Yes, that's the problem. And I'm trying to overcome that problem.
Yeah, you want to live off my free parking.
That's right.
You want to cheapen your life to the point where you get out of jail with a car.
For free. No bail. No. And so anyway, that was about, like I said, it was about 2 years ago that we had those. And I just got really obsessed with trying to figure out how to create a game with these limited components. I didn't want to create a board. I didn't want to create cards initially. I didn't want to do anything. I just had these fish tokens and dice. And I thought, what could I do with these? And 2 years later, I've designed a tabletop game, would be accurately described, because when you look in the box, there's no board. So it's all cards and components and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And dice and stuff.
Was that the end of my question? What did I ask?
You asked me how I got into it. I guess that's how I got into it, really.
Okay, yeah.
But, well, and here's... Let me add to that story, I guess.
Sorry, my turn.
Sorry, Will. That lulled. I looked at you. So I started designing this game about 2 years ago, and when you think you've got a board game, typically what goes through someone's mind is, oh, gee, I'm going to be rich and famous. I've created a game, you know, quick, call the Parker Brothers, you know.
Yeah.
But you're also kind of skeptical or nervous because you're like, well, I don't want anybody to steal my game. So I started researching how do you design a game and all this kind of stuff, and I found a great website called Board Game Geek, and it is basically it's the database for all board games, card games that have ever existed, pretty much ever. And they've got profiles on there, and you can research stuff, and there's forums and all this. And one of the things that I learned through that process was there are hundreds of thousands of games, and no one's going to steal your game.
Right.
And no one's going to buy your game. So all the worry I had of maybe my game being stolen was alleviated because no one's going to steal the game. And really, what's interesting, if you look into copywriting and games, think about all the stuff you do in a board game. Most of that can't be copyrighted.
Right, you can't copyright rolling the dice.
You can't copyright play a card, draw a card.
Right.
You know, you can't write draw from a bag. You can't copyright any of those things because they're super generic.
Right.
There are larger companies that have patented stuff. In fact, I just found out today, Daniel, you mentioned that you've played Magic the Gathering. You know when you tap a resource? The Hasbro owns Magic the Gathering, Wizards of the Coast. They've actually patented that gesture with a card, which is completely a jerk move, because now no one can take a card and turn it sideways
as an action,
saying that you're using that card.
Really?
Hasbro has now patented that action, which is totally ridiculous. But that's neither here nor there. Most actions in a game are completely free reign. So anything you want to do with dice and cards and components, you pretty much can.
I'm going to patent the dice roll.
Yeah. I'm going to patent a hippo eating a marble.
That might be mad, mad royalties.
But what's really cool, what I learned in at Board Game Geek, is there's this whole world of what they call hobby or designer games. And some of the big name designer games are Ticket to Ride, Pandemic, Carcassonne. There's a card game called Flux. Those are some of the biggies. If you've ever seen some of those around, you'll see them at like Barnes and Noble, some of your large box stores. I don't think Target carries any of that stuff, but these are designer games and they tend to run 30, 40, 50 bucks. They're kind of expensive.
Yeah.
But that's like we talked about before, Ben. The reason for that is, unlike a Monopoly or a Sari or something like that, these aren't produced in mass. They're actually produced very small runs.
Yeah, they're like made to order almost, right? Yeah. Like, I'll make one if you want one, or maybe I'll make five and hope that I sell the five. You know, it's very much like an indie music artist.
Like,
you know,
Talisman.
What I'm saying? You know, yeah, you kind of put the money in. You're like, I hope I sell them. I hope people just enjoy them. But you got to price them in such a way that, like, you can't be making bank off five. You know,
right. Yeah.
And so it's almost a game in itself. Like, it's a strategy game, selling your own game.
Yeah, it takes a lot of work and takes a long time to get a game from conception to actually getting out into the public. Example, Ticket to Ride, which is a game I referenced, they boast that they've sold 3 million copies. They've sold 3 million copies internationally around the world. This game's in you don't really need to read to be able to do it, really. So it's kind of an international game, and they've sold 3 million copies. But this game has been around for, don't quote me on this, but I think it's been around for over 10 years. And I don't, have any of you guys even heard of it?
I haven't. No.
Nope.
So Ticket to Ride boasts 3 million sold after being on the market for 10 years, and it's an incredible game. And if you ever see it, buy it. Just do it. It's an absolutely fantastic game. But that's kind of what you're up against,
right? Yeah.
And that's a huge deal.
Yeah.
So I mean, if you've ever gone to a store that I like going to and drooling a lot in, is at the Valley West Mall here, is Games and More. If you ever go in there, and instead of going to the right, Mike, where all the stuffed animals
but
are.
But I like the big giraffe.
Yeah.
He looks at me like I'm his friend.
If you turn over to the left, you'll see this just wall and stacks and stacks and stacks of essentially board games and tabletop card games. And those are just kind of the top tier of stuff.
Let me ask you this, because I actually do I do tend to go to the right because there's trains and stuff over there.
There are trains, yeah.
But on the left-hand side are all the board games, and I look at them, I think, we should get a board game. And just by the sheer number of them, I go, there's no way I'm going to make an intelligent decision here. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's so many games, and, like, I'm not really after anything specific. I'm just more after family time, hanging out, you know, and that kind of thing. It's like, is there anything that would distinguish – is there any good way to distinguish what I'm looking for?
To some degree, it does unfortunately take a little bit of research. The Board Game Geek website is one that I talked about. It's not the easiest in the whole world to navigate, but it is a place where all the games are ranked. You can go to boardgamegeek.com, click on – there's a bunch of buttons towards the top. You can click on family or children's games, and then it'll show you the list, and they'll all be ranked. And the boardgamegeek.com community is people like me who love this stuff. And have voted on, commented on, and all this kind of stuff. So those games are ranked. You can go there in children's game and see the top 10, top 20 games. Now, here's the really terrible thing about guys like you and me, is our kids, you said 3, 6, and...
Just 3 and 6, yeah.
3 and 6. So you and I have kids the same age. The challenge is that most games for kids our age are Candyland and Chutes and Ladders, which we all know blow.
Right.
Right? By and large, they're not fun.
Yeah.
The kids like them okay, but they're not really learning much. By the way, I'll give you a cool hint. I did this with my daughter, and I highly recommend it. If you've ever played Candyland before, which seems monotonous and pointless, you draw a card and you just move whatever. But instead, here's a little bit of a challenge to do, and it makes the game more fun for everybody. Grab 3 cards instead of 1. And then you can play all 3 at a time in any order that you want. And if you've ever looked at a Candyland board, you'll notice that they're in a particular order, but you have to look at those 3 colors, and then you can get there is a best option.
Yeah, yeah. So you're looking at comprehensive thinking here. You know what I'm saying? A quantitative thing where you're looking at and saying, what is literally the best move that I can make here out of the 3 I have? Yeah, that's kind of interesting.
And
yeah.
I would a 6-year-old can do that.
Yeah.
A 6-year-old can totally do that. In fact, a 3-year-old can do it. A 3-year-old might just play them, but you can show your 3-year-old even, watch, if you did them in this order, look how much further you'd go.
Yeah, they'd like that.
And they'd like that. And then all of a sudden, what was a random game has a little less randomness to it. And now you've made some real choices, and you're getting rewarded for your choices.
Yeah.
Which is a lot of, in game design especially, I actually just had a coffee with a friend today who's a board game designer. He's actually just gotten his first game picked up, or not his first game, but one of his games picked up and hopefully to be published within the next year. But one of the things we were talking about, he said it this way. He said that designing a board game is really trying to orchestrate an experience. You're trying to give your audience an experience. You want them to have a good time. You want to reward good choices. You may want to reward bad choices.
Right.
Right. But you're trying to give somebody an experience by doing simple mechanics and different things like that. Not just rolling a dice and playing a card.
Yeah.
But putting people in situations where they have to make choices, and those choices give them reward or benefit or consequences or, you know, screw your neighbor or whatever.
Right.
All those kinds of things. So,
you know, it's kind of funny, like board games offer something that even, you know, technology can't quite seem to grab on the whole, right?
Right.
Like even if you have you know, Family Feud on the Wii, you know, right, for some reason it's not the same as playing the marble game Aggravation with your grandma.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's just not quite the same, right? Like I can go back to that memory when I was a kid and I thought it had to be 2 or 3 in the morning, right? It was probably 10:30.
Yeah,
you know
right.
what I'm saying? But like I was 6 or whatever, and I was up late playing Aggravation with my old grandma. And like I remember that to this day. That was 30 years ago. You know what I'm saying? And so like I don't know, there's something about a board game that just does offer, I don't know, it almost seems like more of a, I don't know, more of a stuck-in memory than maybe like something that flashy technology can't seem to duplicate. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, and the great thing about board games and what was so exciting about board games to me is let me give you kind of an interesting illustration. So one of my family's favorite games, which I would recommend, it's a bit pricey, but it's Carcassonne, which is the name of a real French city, and it's a tile placing game, and it's like building a puzzle. It's very simple. My daughter's 5 and she can do it. In fact, she wins because there's a decent amount of luck, and her strategy is a actual good strategy. But that game is, I won't go into the details too much, but you place tiles and you're building a city. You get points for building city, roads, farms, things like that. I won't go into it too deeply because the illustration is, I love playing this game, but it has these physical components. It's different every time because the city looks different every time. The map looks different. You're building the board, essentially.
Yeah.
And I love it. And my daughter, who's 5, and my wife, they love it. We've played it a ton. I just got it for Christmas. We play it just tons. Play it all the time. So my wife was like, oh, they have an app on the smartphone for it. I'll download the app. And I was just like, and the two of them all afternoon have been playing that thing. And they're like, you should play it. And I was like, this seems stupid to me.
And there's Roloff on a swing in the backyard by himself. Why does no one want to play with me?
I only do the Angry Birds.
Exactly.
Flappy Bird.
Yeah.
Flappy Bird.
Oh, jeez.
Well, and that's the thing about it is to me, it's not the game. Totally. It's kind of what you're talking about, Mike. Yeah. It's a sitting at a table with people, and it's real interaction. When we played our game, when we played Go Diving today, the interaction was funny.
Yeah.
The interaction, the moments that you have, they're shared moments. They're frustrating. They're funny. You said that you were frustrated a whole bunch. Come on, man. And we can all laugh with you. It would be weird if we all watched you play a video game and laughed when you got shot. That wouldn't seem as, that wouldn't seem as fun. That would seem a little bizarre.
I just got stuck.
you're listening to Life from the Path on lifefromthepath.org, broadcasting from 10 to 11-ish on lifefromthepath.org, right? Here's the deal. The KTIA audience, we're glad to have you. It's probably Saturday night. We're going to cut you off, and we're going to have some show remaining over, which you can catch on the podcast. Ben, can they hook up with the podcast on the website?
You sure can. You can subscribe to the podcast. There is just a little indicator top right corner of the website and say, hook me up with the podcast. You can also get it on Stitcher Radio or listen to it. There's a little I don't know, section of the website about halfway down on the right-hand side where you can just hit play and listen to last week's show if you want to catch the audio.
Yeah. We're also talking, we're talking games today. We got a bunch of stuff going on in the studio, but we're also welcomed to the studio by Daniel Johnson. We haven't talked to you forever, man. What have you been up to?
It's been forever. I haven't really been up to much since, when was the last time I was here?
Oh, man, it's been 6 months,
was
isn't it?
Like, was it July?
Yeah.
It was a little before July, before I decided to hang it up.
Yeah. So what's been going on in your life?
Oh man, it's been interesting. I took there's the microphone. last July, I officially hung it up as the artist that I was, as Double J. I figured that that part, as of my life was over. I figured that I had outgrown the persona that I created when I was 10. Because Double J was a creation, like, when I was, like, 10 or 11. Like, I'm going to be Double J. There was no really significance behind it. It became it, and it kind of became my persona. So I kind of hung it up, because I figured it was something new was coming. I was maturing as an artist and as a person, and my ideals were evolving, and I decided that it was a good time to take it down, take some time off, rethink, reevaluate, and then reemerge as a completely new artist with a completely new goal. So it's been interesting. In Search of X is the new name of what I'm doing, because I feel like everyone in life is searching for something. That variable, whether it be money or God or something, everyone is looking for that variable that's going to make them happy.
Yep.
And it's different for every person. So I feel like the movement I'm going with now is to kind of like help people on that route of finding what they're looking for. By sharing my struggles, by sharing like what I'm looking for myself, and just trying to partner with people and like we can get through this. Like this is, it's an interesting perspective, and I feel like everyone can relate to it. It's not a one track. This crowd can relate to what I'm saying, but this crowd can't, or this crowd understands, this crowd doesn't. It's something that every single person that is breathing can relate to. Like we are all searching for something. So that's kind of the direction I'm headed. Hopefully by March, things start to pick up. I've just started getting the pen back up and writing again. So hopefully back in the studio by March and then back on the road by summer. It's kind of what I'm hoping. That's the general consensus.
That's a pretty that's pretty ambitious reemergence. Now, let me ask you this: like without so when you were performing as Double J, right? When you step back from that, does the way that you interact with God, the way that you operate, does that change? Because like you were literally publicly out and about evangelizing, you know, at least once every month, every other week, whatever. I mean, that's what you were doing,
that's
right?
That's what I was doing, yeah.
And so like that goes away. Does your, I don't know, does your relationship change? Does it become different?
I wouldn't say it becomes different. I would say that it, like I said, it evolves. Like things have changed. Cause like as Double J, I was catering to a specific audience. Like, it's like what Lecrae did, or like what other artists have done, is they step back and they kind of not turn their back on the label of Christianity, but more branch out past that. Because there's a lot more to this ministry than just catering to one crowd.
Right.
Because it's not the healthy that need a doctor. Like, that's the whole point. So as an artist, my goal is not just to make Christian ears happy.
Right.
My goal as an artist is to branch out and show everyone else, like, hey, this is what I'm dealing with. This is what I'm doing. Like, and I want to help you with your journey. It's different. Like, obviously, taking the step into a mainstream eye is a little more complicating as far as, like, what you say and what you do. But I feel like in that light, I'm more able to say what I feel like I want to say. I felt like under the Double J name, under that brand, I felt like the eyes on me, I was held to an impossible pedestal. Like, I couldn't talk about certain things or certain struggles that I had because I'm expected to be this perfect person, and I'm not. And I want to finally be able to show people that I'm not perfect. I'm just like you. I have struggles. I have problems. I have doubts. I have all these things that I'm going through. And I feel like in a different light, people can relate to that more.
Yeah. I mean, I that almost sounds like you can put out a much stronger witness, frankly.
Yeah.
I mean, and actually what you say is true, and sometimes it's a little painful, but like sometimes the followers of Christ are a fickle bunch of audience. You know what I'm saying? Like they're very testy on there. Now here's the deal. Like I don't find anything wrong with being discerning about your leadership in that area, right? Like if you you know, but make sure that you didn't put them up on a pedestal. Make sure that God did. Like if God elevates somebody and puts them where they belong as like a leader of folks, then that's something, right? But like you put people like you know, that are going through the same stuff you are, and they're just as sick. They just happen to know the doctor, right? Like that's the difference. They're not better people or different people. They're just fallen people, like everybody else is, right?
Yep.
They just have a relationship with the doctor,
yeah.
And that's the only difference. And like we talk about this a lot, but like especially in the entertainment industry, like The Christian audiences, they're fickle. You say one thing, especially, I mean, don't even get me started doctrinally. You know, one small snippet of denominational infighting, and that's it. You're done.
Pretty much.
You are not worth listening to. You're not. We can't even have a conversation. Yep. We're done now. You know, and like that's kind of the way that that the Christian audience tends to flow. And so, like, I kind of agree with you. That's a it's almost a more fickle waters to be in.
Yeah, and like that was my decision because it got to a point where like people were starting to see like my personal life and like things about me that they didn't like. And it got to a point where, like, Christians were pushing me away from Christianity as a whole. It was, like, people, so many people pointing the finger at me and saying that I'm not a good Christian and that I'm not a good leader because of all these things that they said were wrong. That, like, I listened to secular music. That's one thing.
Yeah.
Someone said that I was a bad Christian and that I wasn't a good leader because of that. I'm like, it's my conviction. It's not yours. Because, like, there's, like, nothing in the Bible is like, you can't listen to secular music.
No.
There's good secular artists out there. Yeah. And they were like, you got to listen to just Christian music. I'm like, who?
Yeah, they got like a small handhold to hold on to.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Starting in the last maybe 5 years, 10 years maybe, that Christian music is even palatable. You know what I'm saying? Like, you go back, say, 15 years. I'm sorry, Dan. But I mean, just
that's all I've got.
Just, I mean, Carmen. I mean, come on. I mean, I just don't know what to say.
Yeah,
that wasn't music.
it was definitely. I got to meet him, by the way. He's a good guy.
I'm sure he's a nice man. I'm just saying.
But yeah, it was definitely a tough last few months because like I was really struggling that last 6 months of my musical career. Like last spring, it was just like. I was struggling, like I was going through, like I was having some serious problems in my faith walk, and I was just going through stuff, and there was no one there to really help.
Yeah,
it's like everyone was pointing the finger instead. They're like, "You're doing this wrong, you're doing this wrong. You need to, you know, buck up." And I'm like, "Dude, like you have just as many problems as I do." Like, so it kind of pushed me out, and that's kind of part of the reason I decided to take a different route is because if you look at the general idea of music, you see Christian artists and secular artists. Like, let's say you see Lecrae, versus like a mainstream artist. Lecrae, if he like one day slips up, everyone's like, "Oh, boo, Lecrae sucks." But one like second, like Kanye West, one time he wrote that song "Jesus Walks,"
yeah,
and everyone loved him. Christians loved him.
Right,
secular music loved
him.
He
said Jesus.
Yeah, it's like when a mainstream artist talks about it, everyone likes him, everyone respects him. But when a Christian artist goes off the beaten path, they're like, "You don't deserve." Like it's like POD. What they did, something that was kind of offhand, and everyone just like. Attacked him.
You remember we talked about that? There was an Effie.
Yeah.
There was an Effie in one of the songs.
I don't know exactly how I feel about it. I mean, part of me is like, that's kind of weird. But part's like, you know what? If that's the route they want to go, then do it. Like, who's to judge their walk? If they feel they're in right standing, then it's complicating road to travel.
That's pretty slippery, though, Johnson.
It is slick, but it's okay. Like, it's tough because when you take that move and decide that. Because what they were initially doing was branching out to a different audience. Like, they were willing to sacrifice a big group of Christian fans to cater to a more lost group of people.
Which I think, I mean, relatively speaking, that's a Jesus move, right?
Yeah.
Jesus sacrificed the group of people who otherwise thought they were in the right to go after the broader audience.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's not outlandish as long as what you're ultimately not sacrificing is what God is calling you to do,
yeah.
Right? I mean, so like that's where, given what you're talking about, I think that's it's slippery, but I'm not concerned about worldly slippery.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like who are you losing? Fickle people that are difficult to deal with.
Yeah.
The same guys, you know, the water tastes foul at Meribah. You know, like what are you gonna do?
Yeah, it's kind of what you're gaining that matters. Like they gained people that needed that. They needed because they were being extremely like relative to what people were going through.
Yeah,
like people are wondering like, who is God? Like who are you to me? And they really expressed that in the song they did that in. And I listened to it a few times.
Yeah,
and I was like, you know, there's probably gonna be more people out there. They're gonna be like, wow, like that makes I can relate to that. And I feel like they made a move that they had to weigh out the options. Like, they knew it was going to happen. They just figured it was worth it. Like
We talked about this a little bit. But, like, I think my ultimate feeling at the end of something like that is like, it's 50-50. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But they took a bold swing. Swing and a miss. Could be a swing and a hit. But they took something bold anyway. And, like, you don't see that much from, especially Christian media outlets because it'll get you canceled. You know what I'm saying? It'll get you off the air. It will get you not listened to, and it might give you boycotted. You know what I'm
Pretty
saying? Any type of bold move, even if it's within the confines of God's word, right? Like if it doesn't meet the, you know, mostly the more stringent you know, set of rules that most hold for a Christian artist, you're done. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. And if you go too far in the Christian community, it's not like you can start bouncing around. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was your niche. That's where your heart was. You know, what do you do about that? Cast your heart out now and be done? And so I find that to be fickle. Roloff, you're kind of in the Christian media business. Do you find any of that to be true?
Well, you hit the nail on the head. It's a business, right? I mean, so yeah, well, you're trying to sell records to a particular market and to a particular audience. So a lot of times that's the struggle that I think any Christian artist has to deal with, that you've got expectations placed upon you. And I don't know what to say. It's a sad thing, and really it started back in the 80s when Christian music
those
became
were the days.
back when Christian music became a thing, right? Before Christian music became a thing, Christian artists were just sold alongside everybody else. When you know Bob Dylan was a Christian, you know, before he was a, there was no Christian artists.
Right.
When he made Slow Train Comin', there wasn't a Christian bookstore you could go buy his record. You know, yeah. The Byrds. I'm trying to think of other guys. Kansas, the singer of Kansas. These are other groups that had Christians in them that just made records. They just made albums. They made music. It was when the label was stuck on it.
Yep.
And then it had to become something else. And I think what Daniel mentioned is really great. We do a disservice to anyone when we lift them up and say, you're now my leader. I'll get on something that I think you guys probably talked about before. The Duck Dynasty thing was a bunch of crap.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. People that, and maybe you guys all did, I don't know, but are we allowed to say crap on Christian radio?
It's your radio station, Roloff. Oh, do what you do.
We'll bleep that later. But anyway, I mean, you know, a lot of really good intended people backed Phil Robertson for his quote-unquote stand for the Bible. And I got a lot of flack on Facebook because I made a comment because the Westboro Baptists online started supporting Phil Robertson. And I said, okay, Westboro Baptists are with you guys. Let's all stand together and hug. I said, let me be clear, I don't stand with Phil Robertson. Well, that was the straw that broke the camel's back. Everybody had to have an opinion about that. Well, the reason why I don't stand with Phil Robertson is because the guy's not my leader, man. You know, I don't care what Phil Robertson does on a Tuesday. Why do I care if he gets in a magazine and says that the Bible says that homosexuality is wrong? What do I care what Phil Robertson does? Why do I have to go to bat for that guy? Because 2 weeks from now, or 5 weeks from now, or a year from now, we find out he's some pedophile freak, it was a sham, he was all lying anyway, right? How do we know that's not going to happen? Why am I going to stick my neck out and back up this guy who I don't know from Adam? I don't know him at all. But here's the other thing that I would say is not only that, but, and this was kind of my comment at the end of my post on Facebook, is the world is watching. The world is, this is Phil Robertson, this isn't necessarily about Daniel, but the world is watching. The world says, who's God? What is God like? And the Christian gets on the radio, on the Facebook, on the TV, on the whatever, and I'll tell you what he's like. He hates those fags. That's who he is. Is that who we want to be? Is that who Jesus is? Are we portraying Jesus in an appropriate light when we're backing a guy who the world just hears being a bigot? Let's be honest. Phil Robertson said two things that got him in trouble. One, he said the thing about the homosexuality. The other thing was he made a wildly ignorant comment about the treatment of black people in the South in the 60s. Okay? Two ignorant statements. Why am I going to stand with that guy and say this is the rallying cry?
Yeah, well, I mean, is that the thing? And is like, is that to Daniel's point? Is culture so remiss of any amount of Jesus that the smallest amount of Jesus we grab onto and stand behind like it's the whole? You know what I'm saying? Like he quoted close to some Bible verses, may have misportrayed the heart of God quite a bit, right? But quoted the Bible verse accurately. Right? Correct?
Yeah, I think he quoted it accurately.
Yeah, he quoted it accurately. Same thing with almost that Kanye story, right? Like, Kanye makes one song with the word Jesus in it, and now everyone wants to kind of get behind him because he mentioned Jesus, right? Even the smallest amount, whether it's the entire story or not.
The essay was in that song.
Yeah, it was. It was.
That's what I'm saying. Like they were so thirsty to grab onto something and support it under a Jesus banner, But these, it's the same folks who aren't going to bat
for Jesus. You know what I'm saying?
It's like, strange. I mean, I find it crazy. It's like Jay-Z mentions, oh, I love Jesus. Everyone's like, oh, I love Jay-Z now.
Yeah.
But one Christian artist kind of does, he's caught in public smoking, and everyone's going to kill him. It doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever.
Michael W. Smoker.
it's weird because it's like they hold Christians to a pedestal so high that nobody can reach it. Like, no Christian artist can meet that. But secular artists are like, they say one thing about God and everyone's like, oh, sweet, they're Christian. Let's love them. It's like, it just doesn't make sense.
It's the fallibility of man worship. I mean, right.
That's
your broad point, right?
Yeah, that's my broad point. We're doing what Israel has always done. The people of God have always wanted a king. We wanted a pretty. We wanted a handsome. We want somebody to rule over us. We are unsatisfied with Jesus. I mean, the bottom point is that we don't want Jesus. We want anything but Jesus. Give us Phil Robertson. Give us Bob Dylan. Give us whoever it is, but not Jesus. Please, not Jesus, because he confronts me. He screws with my life. He makes my life difficult. I don't like the guy. He asks me to do stuff I don't want to do. He asks me to like people I don't want to like. And shoot, you know what? When was the last time he came by?
That's right. And when you put all your faith in a fallible man, when he falls, it's okay when you fall too.
Yep. Right? Well, there's that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just—it's kind of the way that works, right? Like if I put all my stake in the human, and I can say, well, look, you know, he has struggles, so I accept mine, which is not necessarily a bad thing. But I'm not letting Christ redeem them. I'm just accepting them and being like, well, everybody does this, you know. That's kind of the thing. Yeah. And so that's just—it's frankly, it just—it turns out to be cowardly, is what it turns out to be.
And that's just the reason I wanted to get out. It's just like, I don't want to be that person that they look up to, because I'm like, I'm not perfect, not even close. So I just want to do what I love. I just want to make music, and I want to not lead anyone, but walk alongside the people that listen. They're like, okay, he has struggles, so do I. Let's do this. And that's just kind of the whole idea. It's just being an artist that's with the people, not like someone who's going to put himself on a pedestal, like, look at me, I'm awesome.
I'm just trying to think. So kind of what's going on in my head, though, is correct me here, but what it sounds like is I'd like to be in an industry where it's more okay to fail. But maybe here's why I'm thinking this: it's more where it's more okay, where it's more realistic. Like, you're living in a real world.
Yeah, it's not
when
like
you're not in a Christian bucket.
It's nice to be in it because I don't have to pretend. I finally get to live in a world where, like, where I'm making music and doing what I love, but I don't have to put on these fronts. Like, when people come talk to me at a show, like, oh man, I'm struggling. Like, oh man, you just need to buck up. And when I'm going through the same thing, I can be more honest. Like, I understand. Like, I'm there. Okay. And this is what I'm trying to do. And I just try to help them. Like, that's what my music's going to be all about, is like finding what is going to complete you. And like, I'll tell you what's working for me, and I'll talk to you about it. Because I feel like it comes across, and like, I'm not trying to preach to you, but like, this is just what works for me. I'm rapping about, I'm talking about stuff that we're both facing. This is how I'm dealing with it. How are you dealing with it? Let's talk about it.
Yeah.
Let's have more of a friendly, realistic conversation about it, instead of you're looking up to me to preach to you and be that person. Instead of leading you, I'm just conversing with you.
Well, and a lot of times, especially in that in the genre they're talking about, if you're in a Christian genre, it's not like you're not flipping a lot of those guys. Like, all you're doing is reinforcing. In fact, a lot of the Christian media is simply soaking up by people who are taking their time, patting themselves on the back for knowing Jesus, and then there's a big old pool of folk who don't know Jesus that we're not talking to because we're reading the books about them, and we're talking about how we used to be them.
Yeah,
and then we're not making disciples.
No,
that's true. I've been going through this a lot lately. I've and this is just me personally, but I'm hoping that other people are struggling with it too. But like, if you kind of look at the main goal, if our job, if my goal as a Christ follower is to literally follow Christ, hang out who he hung out with, talk the way he talked, disciple the way he discipled, and love the way he loved, right? Like, I got very little of that done. I don't even know that I'm trying most of it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel comfortable sharing my faith with people. But like, I went through this with my 6-year-old this week. I went upstairs to pray with her before she went to bed, and I just when I was praying, I said, you know, I pray that, Lord, that people will want to come to know you by the joy that we have for having you as our God, right? And I usually pray that at night. It's just kind of what we talk about. And when I got done, she looked at me and she said, I try to tell people about Jesus at school, Dad, and they laugh at me and then no one will play with me. And so, like, as a dad, this breaks my heart, right? That's happening to my little girl. But the truth of the matter is, I'm creating a better disciple than I am. You know what I'm saying? Like, she's out there doing it even though that's happening, right? She's still out there doing it, trying to talk about Jesus. And, of course, we had a conversation about, you know, ears to hear, you know, eyes to see, you know, and talking to people when they're ready to hear it. But I said, I love you for your bold heart, and I pray you keep after it, right? Realizing that I probably have backed out of 3 conversations that week, and I'm watching my 6-year-old show up as a lamb to slaughter. And I thought, if that wasn't convicting, I don't know what is. I'm like, what am I honestly doing with the life that God has given me? You know, and actually going out and talking with people who need Jesus, not have Jesus, but need Jesus. You know, like there's still hurting going on. There's still joy being missed out upon. And there's still, you know, my father who weeps for the people that aren't, that don't know him, you know, and my 6-year-old's taking up the burden. Yeah. Bummer. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Fail. Fail, Dad. You know? And so, like, I don't know. That's been really on my heart this week about stuff like that is, you know, am I living in the Christian culture way more than I'm living in the honest, you know, walking with Christ? Because that's where I want to be. Like, the Christian culture is okay. I got a lot of friends. I think there's a lot of love there, right? But, like, not near as redeeming as the relationship with Jesus, and frankly, not near as joyous.
No, and that's really big, and I think we have to ask yourself the honest question: am I living in community, or am I taken up in the show? You know what I'm saying? Like, am I sitting there and am I talking Bible? Like, we talk Bible. I love this. I love this show. I come here on a Monday night. We talk Jesus with guys that I love. And we got community going on talking about that kind of stuff. That's not me buying the 3 fresh books with a guy holding his chin on it and sitting down with my book club. It's not that people can't get redemption out of that. It's not that the book's good or not, and it's not that you can't have community going on. But, like, there is a standard that I think has been kind of filtered through in the Christian community that makes it the show, which is, hey, we only buy CDs from this section. Yeah. And we have to support them because it came out and it's in this section. It needs to be bought. And that guy came out with the book and, like, I know it's, you know, $50 and I know a reasonable book is only $18, but we buy that because we're in the Christian community and that's what we do. Yeah. And, like, that's getting taken into the show as opposed to living in community with folks. And if you're able to pervert that, right, if that's get twisted a little bit, you feel comfortable like you're in community and get none of the benefits from it. And you're just another pawn in the show.
Yep.
That's a twist. That's a devil twist. That makes it seem like, hey, I'm fine, right? That's the whole personal relationship with Jesus facade that says, I just got to be part of the show. Just get in the stream and the boat with the other guys, and it's just going to be fine. And that's not community, and we've fallen for that a little bit. And none of those things on their own, I think, are inherently wrong. But I think how we use them is wrong. How we will just get caught up in one thing and support a certain thing. And it's not because we love Jesus. It's because we're caught up in an identity that is not the Christian identity that we've been given. It's a Christian identity that's been manufactured. And actually, my wife and I were talking about this today because she was what was she doing? She was talking about the guy from Mumford and Sons was talking about that he doesn't do he doesn't associate with the Christian label. Like I say, he's got a relationship with God. I don't know where it's at, but he's like, you know, there's too much baggage in the Christian label. And Bono had said something very similar to that. And my wife and I were talking, and she's like, you know, what are your thoughts on that? And I said, well, I get it. I do understand where they're coming from. But, like, Paul identified as a Christian. You tell me there wasn't baggage when he's like, Christians? You know, you might be a little bit pansy about what you consider baggage. Second of all, like, just because someone else perverted that identity doesn't mean that's not the right identity. I would more pursue that we're living that correctly, and I'm pursuing Jesus with everything I have. So that some guys, I get it now. That's little Christ. I get it. Guy trying to be Christ. And it makes you think. I heard this somewhere. It was a guy talking about the one of the commandments that do not take the Lord's name in vain. And we've totally dwindled that down, right? Because we're like, don't use his name in a foul language, right? Don't curse with God's name in it. When we become God's children, we take on his name. We are God's children, right? being known as God's people. You're taking on his name. What does it look like when I take on his name in vain? That's different. Have I in my life taken his name in vain? Is my life as one of God's people living in vain? That's way different than did I hit my thumb with a hammer and use his name? Like, thinking about that differently, I don't know. That changed how I – that made way more sense to me, by the way. I'm still having to check that out to see whether that – Dan, is that – what do you think?
I think it's kind of both, honestly.
I'm not saying you should be using his name when you hit your thumb. But,
right. But I think you're right. It's pretty narrow when we're saying, yeah, just make sure you use his name, you know, in a friendly way. You're right. We bear his name and how we act –
that it matters
among unbelievers, yeah,
exactly,
credits or discredits his name, yeah.
Exactly, and a lot of I think the stuff that we talk about when we're talking about how that's used is are we pursuing hands out or fingers out? I mean, are we giving the bird or are we extending a hand? Are we looking for to help people with redemption or are we looking to crucify them with Jesus? And I think that's the broad problem. I don't think there's any issue at all with finding if Mike's got something going on in his life to be like, Mike, you know that ain't right.
Yeah.
You know that ain't right. But the difference is like, I'm seeking redemption, right? Like, Jesus is offering it. You're living in a way that's separating you from him. And who the heck would want to do that?
Yeah.
As opposed to, hey, Mike, you suck.
Yeah,
you suck. Best be better or I will be upset with you.
I've been writing Phil Robinson,
who gives a crap?
Yeah.
Who cares what I think?
Yeah.
I just
feel a problem with that. It comes like people who think certain things are wrong. Like, there are some things that people are like, I think it's wrong. And if I think it's wrong, then it must be wrong.
Yeah,
like,
that's a
listening
problem.
To secular music. It's like, I don't think that's wrong. My personal belief is I don't think listening to secular music is bad.
Yeah.
Someone else might completely think that's just the worst thing in the world. And then they try to play that, hey, you need to fix yourself role.
But
and
that's
it's like,
we haven't agreed upon standard.
Exactly.
That's why I love the Bible for marital counseling. Like, either you pick like a counselor who you agree holds the standard, who will help you negotiate, or you say, hey, we both agree on this deal. Like, if that's your standard, then you have a way to negotiate what's right and wrong, right?
Yeah.
And there's areas where people will bicker and fight about it. But, like, a lot of the times when where that's coming from, you know, like, we have a bar. We have a bar. No more, no less. That's what it is. This is what Jesus kind of laid out. This is what the Holy Spirit has inspired. Let's work within that.
Yeah. And here's the thing, like, as being part of Christ Church for a while now, right? I'm slowly learning to have I had a lot of disdain for more religious type folks. You know what I'm saying? Threw extra rules in there. I thought, well, that's a bit stringent. I'm just not seeing where you're coming from. It's not really biblical what you're saying, you know. And I had way more grace for the guy that was sitting in the gutter than I did with the guy who claimed to be part of Christ Church. Mostly because I'm like, you should know the difference than to act the way that you're acting, right? But they're still fallen people, and they're still in a fallen world, and like they're doing the same thing on the other side of the gray line. You know what I'm saying? And I think it's not too much to ask to have the same grace for that guy. He's disobeying God. He's just doing it a different way. You like the way this guy does it because his redemption looks better. You know what I'm saying? Like the guy that's mired in a bunch of dirty sin, you know, like his redemption looks cleaner. This guy over here on the Pride Channel, like that's the same. He's in the same boat, man. And most of the time I cut my grace off for that guy.
Yeah,
like I got to have grace for that man. You know what I'm saying? He's fallen away. From a joy producing life that glorifies God, right? And he's ended himself up in a bitter, unrepentant lifestyle. Same guy, right? And so, like, I know it's easy to jump on the bandwagon and point at the church and say they're religious and they act this way, and I agree they're irritating. But like, we're the same people, right?
Yeah.
Like, sometimes I take my grace away for this man.
That's true. So, like, in an example, right? I might have more grace for the meth head than I do for the secular music guy.
Exactly.
Because I look at the meth head, I'm like, you know, he's obviously way off the hilter. Jesus will redeem.
Right.
Things will be great, you know. And then the secular music guy, I'm like, that guy shouldn't freaking know better.
You pious, prideful jerk.
Yeah.
You know?
And you're right, both in the same spot.
Same guy.
Both grace.
Same guy.
I don't want to have grace for the secular guy.
I know, they're irritating. Religious people have got, I mean, they're just really irritating. But like, I mean, that grace comes down for everybody. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's the same. And so, and I'm not good at that, right?
Yeah.
I'm not good at that part. But, yeah, I tell you what, that's a hard line to toe. You know what I'm saying? Especially because it just is, because you're surrounded by a lot of them. And after a while, when you get the right heart on it, looking at people in Christ Church will break your heart just as fast as looking at somebody out. You know what I'm saying? You're like, you know, I hear what you're saying. You can recite the prayer and you can show up, but man, your life just lacks joy. You know, I feel like you don't know what you're missing. A little repentance and a little getting serious will go a long way here, you know. But
you're listening to Live from the Path. Hey, before we got a cut on our KTIA broadcast, so when do you expect people to be able to buy this Go Diving, Roloff? When can we pick it up?
Facebook.com/RollOffGames. That's spelled ROLLOFF games. So Facebook.com/RollOffGames. Just like that page, yep. And we'll let you know then. I mean, right now, this is the only copy in existence. That's what it looks like right there.
Doesn't that look pretty uptown, though?
It's pretty legit.
Yeah.
I would say it was pretty fun. We got to play it before the show started, and I thought it was pretty fun.
It was good.
Yeah, I did too.
It's very competitive.
I really like being honest if I hate something, just kind of for the wow factor. But I didn't. I didn't hate it at all. I had a really good time. So, you know, I believe you should probably go check out the Facebook page. Maybe you should do some kind of giveaway. You know what I'm saying?
We will.
Yeah. Yeah, get a part of the giveaway. Probably everybody who enters gets a free one, something kind of like that.
Yeah.
Somewhere I get a hold of some stuff.
Something sort of, in some way, kind of like that.
That's subject to limitations.
Subject to change.
Get the demo version.
That's right.
It's an app.
And if you can't find that particular Facebook page, just go to the Life from the Path Facebook page, and you should like what we like, and we like Roloff Games. So
yeah, you bet.
We put the like to it, so you go check it out, and you like it too.
All right, if you're listening on KTA, look, we got to let you go, but you can catch more on the website at lifefromthepath.org or sign up for the podcast. For you guys, podcast listeners, we'll be right back with you. Thanks for listening to Life from the Path. Did I win the Go Diving?
No.
Olaf won the Go Diving.
Yeah.
The creator of the game won.
Yeah. You know what? It's really funny. I normally don't win. So I like this.
Right.
Like this. No, seriously, fellas. I don't ever win.
Yeah. That's right. I've never won before.
Okay, so I can't tell the story on the KTIA broadcast, but I was playing, we were playing some kind of brain quest game with my, with the girls.
Oh, yeah.
And my three-year-old, she doesn't really follow the game very well. She's trying, but she can't pay attention. And all of a sudden, I see her take the dice because it's her turn coming up next. And I see it go under the coffee table, and I see it come back up. And then she sniffs it, and she goes, "That's terrible. That smells terrible." I said, "What? Why?" "I put it in the dog's bum."
Oh, no.
I said, "They don't write that in What to Expect When You're Expecting." You know what I'm saying? Child may insert dice in the dog's butt.
This needs to have a label. Not suitable for dogs.
And then, sniff it and declare the obvious. That smells terrible. The problem was I laughed so hard she got embarrassed. And then I felt bad. Like, I'm like my six-year-old's just dying of humor because of this situation that's happened. And I'm like, "You got to be kidding me. Why would you stick it in the dog's bum? Why would you even think to do that? I don't know. It smells terrible." I'm like, "Yes, it does." Anyway, something to keep in mind with games. You know what I'm saying? You got to watch them kids.
Oh, man, that's shifty.
They should make big dice. You know what I'm saying?
That might be actually worse.
Yeah.
That's right.
Here we go. Dear Life from the Path, my boyfriend and I have been together for 2.5 years, living together for 2. He says Valentine's Day is a made-up holiday to get people to spend money. I told him every holiday is geared toward people spending money. That's touche. I find myself feeling angry and hurt that I'm not receiving anything for Valentine's Day. He never buys cards or flowers for me. How do I communicate to him that this is important to me without making things worse?
I'm on the guy's side.
Are you?
Yep.
Yeah, I'd leave him.
I can't stand Valentine's Day. I just like, I don't know. I'm the kind of guy who does that stuff year-round.
But
like,
he doesn't. It's like, made to rescue this man.
Yeah, this isn't make you look good day, No. We're trying to talk about the guy.
The little article doesn't, like, say all year. It says that day. Like, I never get cards or flowers on Valentine's
Day. He never buys cards or flowers for me.
That just makes me think, like, on Valentine's Day.
Okay, you're wrong.
What? It does not specify in the little thingy.
I don't know how to make that any more straightforward.
Why don't you talk in general like Valentine's Day? I don't know if she was just talking about Valentine's Day or in general.
What's your advice to this man?
Dude, be a man. Do it more. Not just one day a year. Why I don't like Valentine's Day. It's like guys cop, like a cop out. Be like, "This is my one day a year. I got to be nice." And I just hate that.
Yeah, guys who do it wrong.
Which is most.
Well, I think that's what you're supposed to be doing with your music. Straighten it up.
He just wrote a song called Valentine's Day. Right.
Here's her problem. She is giving him no reason to pursue her. She's giving him everything he wants with no commitment.
Pretty much.
Within 6 months.
Yeah.
For the last two years, he gets anything he wants. Why bother with a car? Why bother with a flower?
Do you still give
so
your
wait,
wife
so
stuff,
your
though?
Advice to the woman is tease it a little.
Show me a little leg.
No. My advice is cut off what you're doing, move out, find Jesus, and then start dating.
Wait, does it say that they're living together and having sex like Dan has implied?
I would assume.
After 6 months. They're together 2.5 years. After 6 months, they moved in together, and he's getting everything he wants.
Okay.
The valid assumption.
Yeah, all right. Your advice, Ben?
I'm with Dan on this one. You can't start it the wrong way, keep living it the wrong way, and then assume that it's going to turn out right.
Yeah, you want a fairy tale, doing it all, it's like, you got to work for it.
Yeah. He's the lowest common denominator, and he will continue to act like that, as long as you find that acceptable.
Okay, roll off.
There's a great book by Dr. Gary Chapman called Five Love Languages. He can pick that up at our website. It's facebook.com/RollOffGames.
Yeah. Roll off game for a donation. Free will
versus receiving gifts.
That's right. We are.
Here we go. So our advice is, look, just break up with a guy. This relationship is over. It's not about Valentine's
Day. It's a symptom of the problem.
Yeah.
I would agree.
Stop trying to legislate morality and just call it what it is. You should just not be with the man.
Yeah. Vote Obama.
Here we go. Do better next time.
Secular's advice is, your boyfriend may be cheap, but he also has a point. According to a report on NPR, that's totally reliable. It's silly. The celebration of Valentine's Day started in ancient Rome and contains elements of both Christian and pre-Christian religions. Pre-Christian religions, prior to the Lord making the world. In the 3rd century AD, two men named Valentine were executed by the Emperor Claudius II in different years on February 14th. And a few hundred years later, a pope, Galatius I, combined St. Valentine's Day with Lupercalia, a fertility feast, to replace the pagan ritual. Research this online if you wish, because I found it fascinating. The holiday didn't become...
Yeah, thanks for the Wikipedia quote. Yeah. Is there advice in here?
Okay. That said, allow me to point out that there are a few things more unpleasant than feeling forced to give someone a gift. If you have already discussed this with your boyfriend and he's still resistant, then instead of focusing on what you're not getting out of this relationship, try focusing on what you are getting. It may help you feel less deprived.
Lower the bar. That's That's how you handle it.
Actually, that's how I got my last 3 raises at work.
That's awesome.
Let's not talk about how crappy you're paying me. Let's talk about how much I enjoy free coffee. By the way, keep your money. My family is fine. here we go. dear life from the path. Okay. I have an extremely bright 7-year-old daughter, Amy, from a previous marriage. Her biological father, Jake, and I separated when she was an infant. He lives across the country, so while we shared custody, Amy usually saw him only once a year. For a while, I called him Dad when talking about him to her, but when it became apparent that he wasn't going to be involved in her life, and because I was going to be remarried, we switched to using his first name. My current husband formally adopted Amy last year, and she couldn't have been happier. Now there's a baby sister, and Amy's overjoyed. Mm. Recently, though, Amy has started asking me why Jake never visits and when she's going to see him again. I don't know what to tell her. I feel it would be crushing to her to say that Jake isn't interested in her anymore, but I also don't want to lie to her. How do you tell a 7-year-old she should just forget her biological father because he's never going to be there for her?
Bam!
Wow.
You want my honest opinion?
Yeah.
You just be honest. Like, I mean, you don't have to, there's going to be, punches are going to be thrown. You don't have to put everything, you don't have to haymaker it. You know what I'm saying? But, I mean, she's going to feel it. Her dad's a turd. You know, like.
That
you
feels have, like something, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, don't make her think that her feelings are disingenuous. You know what I'm saying? Like, don't make her feel like she's feeling something that's not the way that she should be feeling. You know, like, it's true. Her dad is across the country, and, he's choosing not to be here. And, like, I don't know what to say that. Like, that's what's happening. And so, like, any form of flowering that up, she's 7 years old. I think I'd tell my 6-year-old that if that was the case. Like, I mean, the more honest you are with your kids, the better. And I like, you know, you don't have to go into every sort of detail of what happened. But, like, you know, I think you'd be as honest as you possibly can.
Hudson?
I agree. I think you have to be honest. You know, at her level, tell her what's going on and what's going on with the relationship, and that's a toughie. How do you tell someone your own father is not interested?
So like, can you guys give me an example of what you might say?
Okay. So same situation, right? Like, we'll call it my ex-wife. She moved out to California. We haven't seen her in 6 years.
Yeah.
Okay, and the daughter asks, you know, why doesn't mommy come around?
Sure.
Boy, I'd use a lot of flowery language because
well,
she's a girl.
Let's have it. You can't just tell this woman, tell the truth.
Okay. Boy, that's a good question. I don't know exactly what I'd say.
When I was 11, my mom just told me, well, we went to the custody hearing, and your dad said, I don't want them, you take them. And so I figured, well, I guess I'm with mom.
I suppose that's pretty straightforward.
That was pretty straightforward. It was like...
I mean, that wasn't shocking either.
Can you ask
just honestly why doesn't dad call? I don't know, sweetheart. I don't.
Yeah. Your dad.
I can't imagine loving you any more. Yeah. So I don't know. I hope you're able to talk to him about that one day.
Yeah.
I don't know where your dad's heart's at. I don't know what's going on in his life. All I know is that you're loved here, and you know, whatever I can do to help you, you know, get in touch with your father, I will. I mean, what else do you say? Like, it's just the honest truth.
Let's pray for your dad, and let's hope that someday he has a change of heart. But right now, he's busy with work. He's
just not in a place.
His life is occupied. Yeah. You know, and he's just not here.
I mean, what are you gonna do? Try to make the guy not look like a jerk? He's a jerk.
Yeah. Can't help that.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't have to call him a jerk, but you can set up the block so they spell jerk. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just kind of the deal.
Well, you know, I've always explained to our children in settings that not everybody loves Jesus. You know, I mean, not everybody's going to follow Jesus. Not everybody's going to live his way. And you can't do anything about that other than tell them about Jesus. And that's really, that's just life. That's
and
just
they say, but
is.
Dad, I told them about Jesus. Now they won't play with me.
Yeah.
It's like, crap. Well,
man, that's rough.
I've had that same conversation. And it is, I know. And you're sitting there thinking, well, man, you don't want to have them back off. But at the same time, you got to tell them reality. Reality is some people just won't like you.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I mean,
because of Jesus.
Is it the entire first grade? Isn't there one? I'm praying that night. I'm like, Lord, isn't there one person who loves you in that class?
Then you say, let's read Jeremiah.
Yeah, seriously. You know, I got the weeping prophet daughter in there causing a bunch of trouble during study hall. For heaven's sakes, bringing her own sack lunch. You know what I'm saying? Like, she doesn't do anything, right? Roloff, what do you think?
Man, that's a terribly tough situation. Yeah, I think honesty is the best policy. We had at our old church, we had a family who was foster family or the foster parents. They had lots of kids that were in the foster system, and they adopted one girl. And they told her that you know, we're your parents, and she turned 18, found out that they were lying to her, and it all went to crap.
Yeah,
and the funny thing was that the foster parents, their response, this is what was hilarious. Their response was, "Well, see, this is why you don't tell them." How ignorant can you be? No, this is exactly why you do tell them, because you can't. You have lied to them now, and that girl went back to go live with that terrible family. They didn't want her around. They didn't want her when she showed up. But she was like, "At least these people are honest with me."
Right. So, they honestly gave me up, and they honestly don't like me. But you know, it's honest.
At least they're telling me the truth. Yeah. I think there's something to be said for honesty, and you gotta. I mean, it's not an easy subject. It's never gonna be an easy subject. And I think, you know, we talk about Jesus a lot, but this is one of those places where the gospel comes in really handy. You know, we have been adopted into Christ. And this girl, she's 7. We of course don't know her family situation, but she has an adoptive father. We can celebrate that. We can mourn the loss of this guy, but we can celebrate the fact that you do have parents that love you. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't make flowery language. That's equally true.
Yeah.
You know, we can't, yeah. So.
Well, and I mean, look at for any scriptural example where you soften the blow of something that's true. You know what I'm saying? Anywhere. God's always fairly blunt. He always directs his prophets to be fairly blunt. Jesus was way blunt. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's no, I that's a societal, it's a cultural thing. You know what I'm saying? Like, attempting to spare, you know, the truth, like, by shading it a different color.
Do your kids ever watch Arthur?
Yeah.
The TV show? No joke. My daughter was watching Arthur the other day, And they have, you know, sometimes on Arthur, they'll cut to, like, it's a PBS thing, they'll cut to real kids and they'll talk about the issue or whatever, kind of on those, some of those shows. Sometimes they do that.
Yeah.
Anyway, and this was an Arthur episode, and they were talking about good times to lie. Good times to lie. You look good. Like, I told Ben that he looked good. That's a bold-faced lie.
Yeah, it's not right. Yeah, it is. Any mirror will tell you different than that.
No, but you know what I mean? I mean, there's what have we come to as a culture that we really want to teach people the difference between a white lie and a real
right,
lie.
The art of manipulating the truth. Because it truly is an art.
It's the whole thing that Daniel was talking about, right? Like, it's the whole facade. We live a life of facadery. Yeah. And as opposed to, like, cleaning that up, making your life way more simple by not doing that, we're trying to figure out how you do it correctly.
No, that, and here's the, like here's the truth of the matter. Like, I have a very close relationship with a young man, and, like, he cannot tell the truth for nothing. Even when he's trying to be honest, it's still 50%. It's still not dead honest. You know, it's not everything. It's more honest than he was, but it's not total honesty. You know, and like, you know, you just look at it and you go, you know, it's really so freeing to be that honest. You know what I'm saying? You got a problem with looking at ladies? Tell them you got a problem with looking at ladies. You got a problem with telling lies? Tell them you got a problem with telling lies. You stealing crap? Are you hosing it up at work? Are you showing up an hour late and leaving an hour early? Are you stealing money from people? You know what I'm saying? Like, tell somebody that stuff.
Why you gotta tell my business on the old, on the net?
Is your name Ben Foost?
This might be you.
Yeah. Are you ugly to boot? Yeah. Did Jesus love you? He's it. You know what I'm saying? Just to do what he says.
Well, I like illustrations. I was a foster parent too in Texas, and we had two little kids for 2 years in our house before they went back to their biological family. And one of the interesting things is Kimberly is her name. She came to us when she was two, left when she was about four. Holy cow, those are developmental years, right? Wow, yeah. But when a kid comes to you when they're that little. And they have been bounced around all over the place their whole life at this point, all two of their years of life. They have no one to protect them. It's really interesting how she behaved. When she first came to live with us, she was the life of the party. Whenever we would go over to my family's house, like my parents' house or my sister's house, she would always crack the joke. She would be the life of the party. And one of the things I noticed when she was being the life of the party was she was always relatively distant from everyone. She didn't want to come and sit and cuddle. She didn't want to be picked up. She'd always make a joke and make you laugh because if you're busy laughing, you're not getting that close to her. It was about 2 years into it, just shortly before she left us, that's a selfish way of saying it, before she went back to her family.
Yeah.
Same thing, walked into my sister's house and all of my family was there to welcome us into the front, you know, like they normally do. And this time, Kimmy did something she'd never done before. She hid behind me. And this was her, she'd known these people for 2 years.
Yeah.
But for the first time in those 2 years, she had someone that was protecting her. She didn't have that for 2 years.
Right.
And I think one of the scariest things in the whole world is to feel alone. We lie and we put on airs and we put these masks on, whether it be the Christian bubble or whatever it is, because we're freaking scared. We're scared to death. If anybody would actually know me, this could all end in tears. And the gospel is, and one of my wife's favorite things in Song of Solomon is his banner over me is love. We need that, don't we? We need, women especially need that, but even men, we all need that. We need someone to say, this one's mine. I love this one. This one's okay. I got you. And that's really scary for people who don't have that. And part of what we need to hear in the gospel is that adoption process. That what we get is we get union with the God of heaven and earth, and he's got that. He covers us, and not just washes our sins away, but he's got our back. What is it, First John? Perfect love casts out fear, because there's no fear in judgment. In the love of God, there's no fear of judgment. I don't have to be afraid, I don't have to lie, I don't have to make up stories, I don't have to do this and that.
Right.
I'm embraced by a God who ought to crush me. That would be right, but he doesn't.
I find it. I struggle with that a lot with what he ought to do and what he chooses to do. I find him disingenuous. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes I find the Lord disingenuous because I know he ought to crush me and he chooses not to. And I understand that. I understand grace like that. You know what I'm saying? I don't know people that act like that. I don't know that I've witnessed that physically on the earth. You know what I'm saying?
You know what's really funny? And I'm going to take that as a correction on that phrase. And here's why. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, right? Genesis 1:1. We just had a really crazy long debate about it, right? And what did he say about creation? He said it was good, didn't he? And he said that Mike Foose was good. He said that Daniel. That's I don't know. They're playing toe tickles.
What's going on over there?
They're tickling each other or something.
Daniel's having some personal issues. He may have bumped his head after dropping his phone.
I was like, I dropped it. I went to pick it up. And...
There's like two people that saw that. That's pretty embarrassing for you.
But I think one of the things that we and I'm a Reformed guy, I'm Presbyterian, Calvinist, all that kind of stuff. One of the things that Reformed guys tend to emphasize a whole lot is what they call worm theology, right? Amazing grace, saved a wretch like me. The wretch theology that we're filthy, rotten, wretched, terrible, awful sinners. Mm-hmm. And what God should do is destroy us because we are bags of feces, right? Do you like
can't say feces on. Well, actually, we're out. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Should I say the S word? It's probably more fun.
Internet only. Do what
we like to
do.
Think of ourselves as more as used tampons.
Yeah. Yes, like Paul tampons. Said, so. Yes. That is more luxurious.
Thanks, Dan.
Rags. That's Isaiah, Dan.
But we tend. But when we do that, I think. When we say that, I think we get to Mike's point, the disingenuous idea that, well, God should crush us, but then he doesn't. Well, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But here's the thing that I think we often miss, and I'm going to take, like I said, what you said as correction to me. God said you are good, and that's why he's saving you, because you are good and you are worthy of saving, and all creation is worthy of saving, and that's why he's saving you, right? Because you are good. The problem is you rebel against that which is good. God has called you to be good, and you've rebelled against that good, destroying and damning yourself, right? You talk about living a joy-filled life. You choose the path of most destruction. You're not being a good human being. You're being a really bad human being. And as such, you're destroying yourself, and God has created a system by which you are destroyed.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose that's essentially it. Like, I think it's just the difference of I can explain the grace of Jesus Christ, and I can understand that it's there, but like in reality, sometimes I find it hard to accept, right? Because I can get burned a lot of times. The 10th time, I'm probably just about done.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Christ's love doesn't work like that, right? And like, I've felt that kind of redemption, but I just don't know that I trust it. I'm saying that I'm wrong in that, right? Like, it's hard to trust a God that great. You know what I'm saying? It's hard to trust a God that behaves that way, because I've never known love like that apart from His. He's one of a kind. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's only one being that acts like Him.
Right.
There's only one being that loves like Him, and so it's not like it. You get used to it. It's not like it happens a lot. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's very singular, and it's very intense, and there's only one, and so it just makes it. You know, when you see two of something, it just you trust that there was a process, a pattern, something happened, and it was looked over that two happened. You know what I'm saying? But like when there's just one, it's an anomaly, it's a weirdness, and you're like, I'm not really sure how that came about. You know what I'm saying? Two giraffes is regular. One giraffe with two heads, weird. You know what I'm saying? You're like, I just don't understand that.
No, it's all right. Just to clarify, the grace of Jesus.
Yep.
Is like a giraffe with two heads.
That's right.
Yes.
You didn't see it coming, but it's awesome.
I like that. That's a t-shirt right there.
And it was created for you.
All right.
What did we get secular's advice on that?
No, go ahead. Yeah. Wait,
oh,
that
I'm
was
afraid
that's the
of
daughter,
that.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go.
By all means, please don't tell her. You wouldn't want to hurt her self-esteem. She's a very fragile little girl, and oh, sorry.
Okay, here we go. Secular says, your daughter needs to come to this realization in stages. And her questions should be answered in an age-appropriate way. Understand that Amy may always be interested in knowing about her biological father, and by the time she's in her teens, she will be computer-savvy enough to search him out on the internet. For now, tell your daughter that the reason Jake doesn't visit is because he's busy, and you don't know when he plans to visit. It's the truth.
He may not be busy.
No, he could be a bum. Well, I mean, yeah, I'm guessing he's a bum. That's my guess. I don't think he's busy. You want to do one more?
Yeah,
unless
you've
got some Pope style.
I'll save my Pope style for next week.
All right.
I like to talk about board games.
We can talk about board games.
It's not my show.
I actually got a jet.
Okay. Daniel's heading out.
I got to go.
All right,
okay.
See you, buddy. Well, thanks
love
for
you guys.
No, thanks for stopping by.
Yeah.
It was good to hang out.
good stuff.
Okay, we'll talk to you later.
I got a gym to get to and stuff.
Yeah, but no, I understand.
I work all day tomorrow and all that.
All right. Yeah.
You by there.
It's weird. Hey, hang on a minute. He's gonna go.
Nice to meet you, sir. Yeah.
Nope, there he is, talking to folks.
Bye. Oh, I'm in the way, sorry.
Nope. No, I guess we'll see you later. You were listening to the Daniel Show. More about Daniel coming up.
Yeah. All right, hit with the last one.
Here we go, last one. Dear Life from the Path, my brother Jared is dating a woman, Dawn, who is about 10 years younger. They've been seeing each other for about a year. She seems nice and is polite at family gatherings. I have noticed, however, that whenever I'm spending time with my mother, Dawn is constantly texting or calling her. I'm a grown woman too, but I never communicated to that degree with any of my boyfriend's moms. Jared has told both mom and me that he isn't even close to wanting to propose marriage. Do you think it's peculiar that Dawn contacts my mother multiple times daily?
No.
They just get along.
Yeah, whatever. What the heck do you care? Sheesh.
They have stuff in common.
Hey, well, what do you use to get stains out of this shirt?
I'm gonna say that it's 11:20 and I'm confused. I don't know what just happened. Something about 10 years and people calling people and love. And can't we just all get along? Something.
Just roll the dice.
Okay, I'm going to tell you what Secular says, and we're going to be done with this thing.
Okay.
Secular says, Dawn may not have a mother of her own and need a mother figure. That's completely speculation, which is why she does this. Or she may be attempting to ingratiate herself to her boyfriend's mother because she thinks it will help her land your brother. Not knowing Dawn, I can't say for sure. That didn't stop you before. But this technique has worked for other women in the past. Yeah, it's just a non-issue, man.
Yeah, whatever. Keep that up, man.
My boyfriend's or my brother's girlfriend texts my mom a lot. Who cares? You know what I'm saying? It's your mom's phone, and it ain't you. What in some nosy business?
Yeah.
Okay, that's it. We're done.
Okay, we don't need to be a part of that anymore.
Yeah, we're out.
Tell her not to write back.
Yeah, you know what? Don't write it again.
Don't ever.
You are banned.
Anymore.
We are done with you.
Well, if you got anything else going on at your place?
Yeah.
You're way too sharp at 11:20. What's that question?
Huh? You got anything else happening at your place? What time you got to get up in the morning? Early?
I got a Bible study at 7:45 in the morning.
I got to leave town at 6.
Well, you win.
So you can take your pity party out at the gym with Daniel Johnson. Hey, boys, I got to go.
Do you have any other games in the tank? So we played a...
What's that? What first one called?
Samson and Delilah.
Yeah. Is that what it's called?
What's it? You got a name for it?
It's Samson and Delilah, the card game.
The card
game.
Okay, that's pretty fun. Yeah, sounds pretty sharp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lame. Hudson's off your marketing team.
sharp. I get it. Man, I'm not awake. All right, here we go.
I do. Jeez, roll off. I mean, what, you're not 80. You know what I'm saying? You had a full strength soda before you came in here.
It's
what's
true.
The deal?
I'm not tired. It's just like the brain ain't firing real quick. You guys live at a much higher pace than I do.
In the city.
I've heard that before.
Yeah, I ain't from this big city.
So wait, do you have any other games in the tank? Anything you might be able to tease a little bit?
Yes, I currently in this building right now have 4 games. I've got Go Diving that is essentially done. It's still not completely done. In fact, I would say, for full disclosure, I think when we were playing,
yeah,
when you could turn in the non-assigned animals in any group, that ain't no good.
Oh. No, it's gotta be.
You know why? Because you know what happened, right? It sounded okay, but as soon as we realized you could do that, everybody just canned out every time as quick as they could.
That's right.
Did you notice that?
Right, the you table didn't try to stockpile other things,
because you were just getting rid of all your stuff.
Yeah.
And there was no challenge to it, because if you just had 6 of anything, it was gone. So there has to be a little bit of a push on that. But anyway, so that's called playtesting, which I've been playtesting this thing for probably a year.
Yeah.
It takes a long time to work out some of that stuff, because the neat thing about a game is it's all about interrelationship between human beings. So I've got... So Go Diving is really close to done.
Yep.
It's really close to done. I've got another game that was inspired by the movie Nim's Island, but of course I'm not going to try to print a licensed property like that.
Yeah.
So it's being rethemed. It will either be called Mice in the Kitchen or 3 Hungry Mice. And it's actually a game perfect for your girls. You have 2 girls, right?
I do.
It'd be perfect for your girls, and I can show it to you. And I'm going to be printing that one. That one's pretty much done. It's a memory adventure game. Where you're on, well, the Nim's Island one, you're on an island, you're hunting for the resources to get to Dad, who's out on the boat. I don't know if you remember the movie. But anyway, it uses basically memory and some strategic moving, and then there's some obstacles and traps and stuff like that. It's pretty simple. And then I've got a two-player light strategic board game right now themed using the theme of paintball.
Yeah.
I'm trying to capture that feeling of the speed and intensity of the open field style paintball, where you just have some stuff you're hiding behind, the capture the flag stuff. And the components are just dice. I have to show it to you.
I feel like that's a tough row to hoe there. You know what I'm saying? The intensity of open field combat with dice.
Well, right. I mean, there's a
I mean, I like your ambition, Roloff. I'm just saying.
I throw a dice at a guy. Right. In a tabletop game.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, there's obviously some limitations. Although there is a game that was made by some guys in Germany called Street Paintball that's actually really fun, and you actually have colored balls on the table that you chunk at each other.
Oh, sweet.
It's kind of fun. But that's the other one. I've got another game that is back here in development called Legal Limit. No, it's not about drinking. It's actually about fishing. The idea, it's another set collection style game, kind of like Go Diving. But the idea is we're all fishing on a lake, but we've only got certain fishing licenses. And those are kept secretive.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to catch as many fish as I possibly can, but I've only got fishing licenses for certain things. And there's a DNR character that kind of can come around and bust you and stuff like
okay,
that.
Okay, I really like the sound of that one.
And there's bribing the DNR. You can bribe the DNR guy. If that goes well, he just goes away. If it doesn't go well, it doesn't go well.
Yeah.
So Legal Limit's another card game that I'm working on, and that's it at the moment.
Sounds pretty cool. I'd probably buy three of those games.
Yeah.
I don't know about your paintball with dice.
I'd have to see it. I'll keep my mind open.
It's actually interesting. What's fascinating about that game is, I could show it to you, but it's the idea of moving groups of your guys at the same time to reposition them. And anyway, you'd have to see it.
Yeah,
I've kind of made my mind up, Roloff. I feel like I don't like it.
That's good. You shouldn't like it.
Yeah. I'm open. I'm open to it.
But, you know, I honestly, if anybody's still listening to the podcast at this point, or just for you guys, Ticket to Ride, it really is a good game.
I have played that before.
Is it fun? Did you like it?
It was great.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was very unique. Very, yeah.
Yeah. It's an incredible game. There's
Dan is on fire tonight.
I'm telling you. Go out and get that game. We will change your life.
We need a quote for the front of the game. It was unique. Yeah.
Pastor Darren Hudson.
No, but gifted with words. Fantastic. Yeah, I highly recommend that game. Settlers of Catan is came out in 1993, and is called Settlers of Catan. It has self-proclaimed the monopoly of our generation.
Really?
It's so much fun. You know what? One of the neat things about Monopoly is the bartering and the bargaining.
Yeah.
Hey, I got this property over here for this. Settlers of Catan is basically that system, right? What you have is you've got this island. We don't have to talk about this on the air. But anyway, I'm like, wait a second. People spent good, hard-earned money downloading this sucker.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, Settlers of Catan, that's a really great game where you're trading resources. But, man, that is a boatload of fun right there.
You know, we might have Roloff come in every once in a while and be our game guy. You know what I'm saying? Tell us what to be doing.
Here's the deal. There's something very wholesome and awesome about sitting down and playing games with folks.
I ain't no doubt.
And I hate it. I really like it when I eventually do it.
Yeah. We have friends that we get together with, and they're always like, let's play a game. And then inside I'm going, it's like the fingers on a chalkboard.
Yeah,
let's play a game. But every time we do it, I'm like, we leave and I'm going, why don't we ever play games?
Yeah, exactly. That was fun. Yeah. That really was fun.
You know what I attribute that, though, to? And this is in the board game world, that we call it Ameritrash. A lot of the game, we all ask what was our favorite games, right?
Yeah.
Sorry, Monopoly, Life. We call those Ameritrash. And what I mean by that is there's not much to it. I mean, honestly, think about it. Monopoly is just Candyland for grown-ups.
Yeah.
There is some.
Why is it? Yeah, no, it ain't.
No. Well, okay. There's more going on. There's more going on than just Candyland. But think about how little you can really control. You can't control where you land, and since you can't control where you land, you can't control what you buy, and since you can't control what you buy, the only thing you've got in that game is trading resources. Or trading the...
Yeah, deal with the hand that you were dealt.
Yeah.
Right. But there's better ways, there's more fun, interactive ways where you can shorten the game. The problem with Monopoly is nobody wants to play Monopoly because it doesn't end.
That's what people who lose say.
But but Monopoly...
Good point.
I would say, though, if you can't know that Monopoly is going to end in an hour, it's a little daunting. right?
Well, that's true. You have to set a day apart. Usually an evening. You know, we're starting at 5. It could be 10.
And that's one game. Whereas if you got together with some friends and you played Go Diving, you could play Ticket to Ride, you could play Settlers of Catan, you could play a card game, you could play some dice stuff. You could play more games in that amount of time and have different kinds of experiences, and one of those experiences could be the best experience from Monopoly.
Yeah.
The thing is, there's nothing wrong with Monopoly. It's not a bad game. It's still a great game. But there are just better games. I mean, Monopoly's been around for a long time.
So game is the Bible.
Right. But board games aren't infallible, though. So
check. I have a legitimate board game question for you, but I didn't think it was appropriate earlier because the radio broadcast people probably wouldn't care.
Yeah.
You were describing
buying your career's copy, though. By the way.
You were describing the whole game idea. You make choices, you're rewarded for your choices, and there's competition, and you want to win, and blah, you know, the whole thing. And I was thinking, you know, so do they sell many games, board games, like in communist countries where their system's not set up that way? I mean, that kind of like question, just feeds into America.
Yeah,
you know,
Dan, that
like,
would have been an excellent question.
Well, I was thinking, like, oh, your politics.
No, that's a. They probably look at that gaming differently.
Yeah, yeah, I mean it's just they probably don't get it.
Well, Germany's not a communist country. There's a lot of tabletop gaming in Germany. What are the big. China, right?
Yeah, China.
China produces a lot of board games for us. I'm trying to think if they play many. But I think the answer. I think the answer is yeah, because the reality is we make choices every day. So it does. I mean, even though you can't make capitalistic choices, you can make. There's a lot of agricultural games, a lot of what they call Euro games or European style games.
So it's a different twist.
Yeah,
because see, what drives us in our games is I want to win. I want to crush my family in Monopoly.
Right. Well, think about.
I'm glad you came, Grandma Millie.
I'm gonna take you down.
Yeah, well, you could drive that car of despair home.
But think about you've played Ticket to Ride. Now I don't know if you've just played Ticket to Ride once, but Ticket to Ride is a good example of the kind of game where it's a classic Euro game, because what you're doing is you're trying to accomplish your set of goals. Mike's trying to accomplish his set of goals. I'm trying to accomplish my set of goals. The competition is who can get their goals done the best and the quickest. And where competition lies is in the natural working out of there's only so many rail lines to be used.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not intent, because I don't know what you need. So I'm not taking this rail line to stick it to you. Although the second it happens, if you play Ticket, you're pissed. You want to punch your guy, even if it's your dad, because I got pretty ticked at my dad. He got pretty ticked at me, too. But that's what happens, and it's the joy of it. Most European-style games are like that. What you're trying to do is usually somewhat self-contained, and the competition comes up in a more casual way, kind of like that. But the neat thing is you can work harder at those kinds of competition if you want to. But that's what, to me, that's what makes hobby game, designer games, Euro-style games so much more fascinating. I could talk for hours about this. I mean, but just giving people little bits of decision, decreasing the luck, making it more about strategy, just makes a far more enjoyable experience for adults. And if you can introduce that to kids, it's even better.
Oh, yeah. That's what I think. I mean, I was thinking, honestly, I figured that communist countries probably don't allow some of those games because it would feed into freedom and capitalism. And
I wonder. Yeah.
I mean, that's how you change a culture, is through their entertainment. Look, that's how America has changed so much. It's through our entertainment.
I'm trying to think. What are some of the biggest? There are Korean games, but then again, there's two sides of Korea, so I'm assuming it's from the non-communist side.
You're listening live from the Path on livefromthepath.org. We're wrapping this podcast up, buddy. Thanks for hanging on for so long. There's been great things happening. Nothing really happening in your house, so you made a good decision here. Ben, what do we got going on next week? Anything?
No, I doubt it.
It's probably going to be sword fighting.
I got some Pope-style advice that we'll hit, that we'll talk about next week.
All
right. It has to do with how you, I don't know, what are you doing today? So we'll talk about that.
Nah, it's motivational.
Yeah.
Boo.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. We will, we'll catch you next week. Thanks for hanging on. And big thank you to our sponsors. Big thanks to Bob Eisenhower with the Eisenhower team. Go to EisenhowerTeam.com. Now may or may not be the time to buy or sell a house. Bob would know. You should talk to Bob. He'll help you out. And also the folks at Westfield Veterinary Hospital. And if you go to westfieldvethospital.com, you can set up your appointment online, or you can give them a phone call. And here's the deal. If February is the pet dental month, he don't have any thumbs. Your dog does not have thumbs. He don't brush his own teeth.
Nope.
You're going to have to take care of that business. And if you're not, hang your head in shame. Call the vet. They'll do that stuff for you. They help you set it up. Do general maintenance on the dog.
That cat's breath is not supposed to smell like that.
Exactly. And that tongue is not a miracle weapon. I know you think it does everything, and that's all he needs is a tongue. Have you ever, you know, cleaned your leg with a tongue?
That's
not a good idea.
What part of kibbles and bits sounds edifying?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Here, you give him the same food every day, twice a day, and expect him to use his tongue as his main weapon. Take him in. Have him looked at. WestfieldVetHospital.com. Thanks for listening to Life from the Path. I hope you guys have an excellent week. We don't have any tunes.
Where's the tunes at? What is that? Why are you doing that?
Hey,
Bow. 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 Bow.